Hi, Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
So Bob, Linda, Joe, and Tammy are, none of us knew exactly what to do in the session, so you're going to hear kind of an a cappella sharing, but we all have alcoholism in our families, both in the generation before us and the generation following, and we certainly had alcoholism in this generation. And you know, talking about how alcoholics share recovery, you know, what do alcoholics do in their family? It's kind of like, you know, how does an alcoholic have diarrhea? You know, I mean, we think that everything we do is different because of our alcoholism, when probably the fundamentals are not different than what normal people would do. But as Bill said in the 12 and 12, we're problem people. As a group, we have more problems. And I think subsequently, we have more problems in our family. My father was an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. We have three sons that are alcoholic. And I have a brother and a couple of nephews. So we've had alcoholism pretty riddled through the last four or five generations of our family. And the contribution that the program makes in that process is just extraordinary. Without the program, you deal with it in an entirely different way that does not work. You know, even though at some level we know the alcoholic is sick, we still expect and want that person to act well. And so we keep getting hurt time after time after time because that person acts inappropriately. And then in my particular case, and in many of our cases, we bring, even in recovery, we bring the lingering significant defects of character that continue to color the water of marriage and water of parenting, as I did, and I'm going to talk more about that when it comes back to me. And so, but the contribution, we are people who Bill said have trouble having relationships. You know, we're either trying to struggle to the top or crawl underneath and be dependent upon people and being a true partner. You know, of that we knew little, and one time someone asked Chuck, interesting, they asked Chuck, Chuck had issues with his children also, but they asked Chuck about, complained about how to deal with their children, and Chuck said, treat them like drunks, which is an interesting thing. Most of us come to a conversation with another suffering alcoholic, if you're alcoholic, or another Al-Anon, with less judgment and history than we do in almost any other kind of conversation. And there's a openness and a receptiveness and a peerness, not a verticality, peer-to-peer, having that respectful conversation with each other, which is a much more effective conversation within a family setting. So Linda's going to start us out.
Thanks, son. I'm Linda Bazans, and I am a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Linda.
This is just a tough subject for me, because it feels so vulnerable and it feels so big. You know, 10, 15 minutes on the incredible journey. I guess starting off with that, I cannot tell you how grateful I am to Alcoholics Anonymous. If it weren't for Alcoholics Anonymous, we wouldn't have a life. We wouldn't have a marriage. I don't know if Bob would be alive. If he weren't, we wouldn't have any children. If I mean, the whole thing is so dependent on AA. If it weren't for AA, we wouldn't be all sitting up here. So AA has taught us, I think, how to be married. At least it certainly taught us tools that work. We had tools that didn't work. But it's such a complex subject. Relationships. How do you describe relationship? How do you describe how you are in a relationship? So I tried to look at what it meant to me to when it works. What goes on in our marriage when we're doing it right. And I guess the first thing for us, or for me, is when we're doing it right, we're doing it with God. If we're doing it alone, might look good on the outside, but it sure doesn't feel good or look good on the inside. And I don't know how well it does look on the outside. And I've always been one who wanted to look good. I wanted it to look like we had it together. And I'll tell you, with three alcoholic kids and a husband, a somewhat rambunctious husband, it sure didn't look put together. And alcoholic children are really, really inconvenient. I want you to know that. You know, as an Al-Anon, we talk about how much compassion we have, and we do. We have to have. But, God, if they would just look better sometimes, you know, I was like, couldn't they just act differently? Well, they couldn't. But going back to the marriage, I think the first thing is God. I think the next thing is that you really have to take care of each other. You know, you have to have a sense of care and a sense of kindness. You have to know how to resolve conflicts. And the steps teach us how to resolve conflicts because the steps give me a focus on me, not on what I can change with him, which was my original focus. But what can I do about me? And once it becomes about me, then I know there's something I can do. I used to think I could change other people. I really did. And I knocked myself against my head against that wall for so long until the day just came when I finally surrendered and realized I couldn't. If I could have, I would be still doing that. But I can't. So I have to learn how to resolve conflicts. And those 12 steps are incredible conflict resolvers. You have to learn how to compromise. Going back, I think you have to continue to care throughout even what I'm saying. You have to care for each other. You have to value each other. And look at the importance in each other and look at the things that Bob is trying to do and that the things that I am trying to do that he looks at and have a value. All of these things are important, but sometimes alcoholism gets in the way or our behavior gets in the way and we forget the kindness, we forget the value, we forget the compromise. We want to win. We don't want to resolve the conflict. We just want to win, or at least I'm speaking for myself. That's why I think this is so hard. I feel like I have a raincoat and I'm just opening it up. And
used to do that.
Oh. That'll be the next session. Okay. We have to laugh together. We really do, because sometimes the things that we do are laughable. And sometimes if you can bring humor into it, it makes it less difficult to deal with. So I think laughter is real important. You have to give each other space and not be in each other's space at all times. You know, I hear sponsees, you know, they're reading each other's emails and they're constantly checking on each other in so many, to me, just seem like obtrusive ways. Bob's really lucky. I'm not really good at the email, so I don't even know if I could get into his, you know, but I don't care to. And he doesn't care to get into mine. You know, you got to give each other space to be. It's respectful. It just doesn't seem right. It's like reading each other's mail. That's not my business, you know. So I think we have to respect each other. We have to allow for the differences. And we have differences. That's why we were attracted to each other. You know, we have three children. They're all different. I have to be different with all three of my kids. And thank goodness they're different. I don't want three of the same. I want all three of them, you know. But you have to respect that and enjoy it and find the pleasure, you know, in the differences. I know Bob has given our marriage so many gifts, but one of the gifts that he gave us years ago, I think we were married about maybe 4 years when this occurred, and I still see it as a real stepping stone for the rest of our marriage. And last Wednesday, 2 days ago, we celebrated 48 years.
Oh, wow.
So, I know. We've been doing this a long time. Sometimes not so pretty, and sometimes it looks pretty good. But we've been doing it a long time, and we're so grateful for that. But I think we were married about 4 years, and we were using the word divorce a lot. At least I know I was. And of course was a threat, and of course was used when I was angry. And, you know, basically, you keep doing that, and I'm going to divorce you, you know. It had little different nuances, sometimes more heat than not, but it was always a threat. It was always when I was angry, and it was never kind. And this particular day, I remember it very, very well, and I was very angry with him. Of course, I don't know what about, but I was angry. And he said to me, "Can we just sit down and talk?" And I said, "About what?" You know, I mean, I was just... No, I don't want to talk. I just want to be angry, you know. And he said, "You know, we've been using the word divorce a lot." And he said, "I would like to make a deal with you, and I'd like you to make one with me, that we eliminate that word from our vocabulary. Because if we continue to use it, it may become a viable option." And I remember just starting to cry and thinking, I don't know if I thought how wise at the time, but I remember thinking how kind. And I remember thinking, yeah, that'll work. And I don't remember if we have, but to my knowledge, neither one of us have used that word since. And if it weren't for Bob's wisdom at the time, that would never have happened. And I really think that was where we really deepened our commitment. And if divorce wasn't an option, you better get better at conflict resolution. You better get better at compromise. You better get better at all the things that I just talked about. So to me, that was a real important thing. When it came to our kids, I think it was compassion. You know, why were they doing what they were doing? The fear, as any of you in the audience know, I think, I don't know why, but for me it was always worse with the kids. It just was. It was scarier. I felt much more responsible for them, and I felt much more helpless with them. Now you have to keep in mind, Bob had his last drink 8 days after we were married. So I did not live with active alcoholism in the house. I lived with alcoholism. We all lived with alcoholism. But we didn't have active drinking. So I didn't have the fears with Bob that I had with the children. And I felt so much more responsible for the children than I did for my husband. And with each of the kids' journey, I was a beginner all over again. I think our three children have approximately close to 70 years of sobriety. And if that isn't a gift, when we were talking about gifts today, I wanted to bring that up, but I thought, no, it belongs more in this venue than it did then. But for three children who are 46, 44, and 35 to have almost 70 years of sobriety, they came in at 17, 18, and 19. And if you don't think we are grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and then to Al-Anon, I can't put it into words. There are no words. I don't know why we were so lucky. I don't know why our children were so lucky. I have no idea. I do believe that our God gives us all the gift, but not everybody opens the box. And for some reason, we were lucky enough that at the moment, our children, the children, you know, they had all sorts of consequences, so they had opportunities at that gift more than once. But for some reason, on the one day that each of them were able to hear it and accept it, And all three of them have been sober ever since. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love alcoholics. You can probably tell. I absolutely love alcoholics. One other thing that, and I don't want to get on a soapbox here, but I do want to mention it. I think that the other thing that kept us together and keeps us together is listening to each other. And I look at the way the world is today, and I think it is so much harder to listen to each other than it was when we first got here. There are so many distractions in the world with videos, movies, media, Facebook, things that are plugged into us that we're listening to at all times. I mean, I just think that to stay together, you got to take the things out of your ears and you got to listen. And you've got to have the compassion toward each other. And one of the best things you can say to someone is, I want to spend time with you. And I think the world fights that today. And I just look at it in our marriage with us, and I look at it all over. I mean, with people that have young kids, they're talking about they can hardly talk at the table because everybody's texting, and we never had those issues. So I think we have to be even more vigilant to say you're important. And in a marriage or any kind of a relationship that you want to last, you have to continue to tell each other that you're important. And that's what I want to keep doing, because I want to keep being with this guy for a long time, and I want to keep having the relationship we have. And I guess that's all I have, but I thank you, AA, for our marriage and for our life. Thanks. Joy.
Joe. All right. Good afternoon. My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm always still surprised whenever I get asked to be part of one of these things. So it's really an honor and a privilege to be here. It's an honor and a privilege to be with Bob and Linda on this panel. And but it's really an honor. To be here with my wife. She got railroaded into doing it. So she would have never volunteered, trust me. But we are an Alcoholics Anonymous family, and we're a family in recovery. And, you know, if you were to Google, you know, if you want to fix your lawnmower or something, you can go online and Google how to fix this, right? If you Googled what we are is the how not to fix it. We're that family. My wife and I have had the... we've been married twice. The first time didn't take. And I had to pick up a white chip in marriage. But it was one of those boy meets girl on AA campus, and it was a, you know, tumultuous love affair and in recovery, and one of those things where we got together and had a blended family. But I had no relational skills. I had no relationship skills. Bob talked about it, and Linda, thank you, Linda, for sharing. I mean, you just touched on so many wonderful things. I don't know what a normal family looks like, but I was always trying to. You said it today. We're always trying to pretend we know. I spent my entire life trying to pretend I know. I got sober, and I was one of those guys that thought that, well, now I'm sober, you know, I should be able to make a pretty good go of it. There's no more alcohol in my life. The problems are going to go away. And we got married, and within a year, she was throwing me out. Threw me out of the house. And it was... what I brought to it was my old relational skills. I thought, being sober, I'm now qualified to be a good husband, a good father, a good employee, a good friend. I didn't know that I was not qualified. What I'm qualified to do now is to learn how to be a good father, a good husband, a good friend, a good employer, a good employee. And that's a painful process. I'm not that guy. I'm the guy that does not like any kind of hiccups, any kind of pain or discomfort. I'm the throw the baby out with the bathwater guy. That's me. And that's what happened in our first marriage. But we have, like Bob and Linda, we have alcoholism in our family and brought up with it. Tammy's probably going to tell you a lot about her family. But we were just talking. It's so prevalent in everybody's life. We were talking to a friend of ours in the lobby and his wife, and they were trying to get in touch with their son. They're here at the conference, and they were trying to get in touch with their son, who may be one of us, and don't know where he's at, but they were trying to spend the afternoon trying to get in touch with him. Just the way it is if you're dealing with alcoholics and alcoholism. The young lady that came to my wife's women's meeting was in a treatment center for pregnant women and for unwed mothers, and got sober and had her child, and she was at the meeting. My wife will tell you the story. She was at the meeting trying to feed her newborn baby, 4 months old, gummy bears. Had no mothering skills. Today, I mean, we don't have the family unit, the type of upbringing that I had when I was a kid, even though there was something to, it may not have been perfect, but there were some ideals and principles that the TV reflected it. Different things reflected. It's kind of like the anti-principles today, you know. And that girl left that meeting, and just last week she hung herself. And a day later, her boyfriend, the father of the baby, hung himself too. So alcoholism affects everybody. You know, that part in the book where it talks about, you know, that we're under the delusion that we think we didn't affect anybody. We don't hurt anybody by our drinking. We do. And our lives were, she had two kids and I had my son, and when we got together, we were married, but we were, you know, at least me, I won't talk for her, because she really was a mother and a housewife and had some experience with that. I didn't. I was single and I was 44 years old, and I had a son, and he was 3 years old. And so when we got together, I brought the only relationship skills I thought, and I thought these were pretty good principles. What I brought to it was, in this relationship, was 50-50. I thought partnership meant 50-50. I've since changed my ideas on this, but you see, here's the problem with 50-50. I'm keeping score. And I'm always watching to make sure you deliver your 50. And I got to keep just a little in reserve in case you don't, because I got to protect myself. Well, then I'm not really in. It's a business arrangement. And what happened is we got married, and I brought this relationship, I brought these skills to that relationship, and I'm going to tell you what happened. Sooner or later, now I'm going to be a little dishonest, because I got to keep some things in reserve. Emotionally, materially, I've got to keep some things in reserve that you don't know about. Well, guess what? I now start to become the cardboard cutout of a husband. And that's what I became. And at 6 years sober, I burned my life to the ground. My wife asked me to leave our house. And I left. She wasn't going to put up with it anymore. And I couldn't figure it out. And I run a business today, and I always tell people, if I fire you and you're surprised, you deserve to be fired. Well, if your wife comes to you and says, I want a divorce, and you're surprised, you need to be divorced. Because I was surprised. I was that unaware. And what do you mean? I'm working 14 hours a day. I'm doing so much for you. But I was always keeping my score. And it wasn't what she needed. I wasn't present in that relationship. But when I was walking out the door, she said something that later came back and changed my life. And I didn't hear it when she said it to me. But what she said was, can't you see that all your relationships end the same? And I went, whoa. Now, I was so angry and I was so upset, I didn't. But when I was later on, when I was miserable and lonely and I wanted to drink and I wanted revenge and I became an AA stalker, because I figured, now she's going to meet a real man. You know, Not some loser like me. So I'd drive by the house. I became an AA stalker. But later on, I started to look at that. And when I went through the steps and I embraced this process again and got down to causes and conditions, I saw that the only people that were left in my life were people willing to forgive me. Because sooner or later, I was that same person. I was selfish and self-centered. I love what the book talks about it on page 61. It says, "Can't you see that he's only out for himself?" I'll paraphrase it because that's what it is. And does his actions not make everyone else wish to retaliate for themselves? Producer of confusion rather than harmony? Well, that's what I was sober. Stone cold sober. And what happened was, is I had to develop new skills in relationships, and because my alcoholism was killing our family. It was my alcoholism, untreated. I had given God the felonies, the alcohol and the drugs, but I was keeping the misdemeanors because they were fun, you know. And I might need some of them. What happened was, is we both threw ourselves into our program. We didn't see each other, and sometime down the road, about a year, year and a half later, we ran into each other. We started a date, and we were different people. We had come through the steps again with a spiritual awakening, and we had to come into it with a different basis. Linda talked about it, and when we got together, we said we're not capable of having a successful relationship. Just like I'm not capable of staying sober without God's help, we're not capable of having a successful relationship without God's help. So we started to do what the book says. It's crazy, but it really suggests it in there. It says you might invite your spouse to join you in your morning meditation, and we start praying every day together. Pray for our marriage every day because it's a valuable thing in our life. And our kids, talk a little bit about alcoholism and our kids. My son, who I had custody of, his mother never did get sober. We don't know where she is today. I don't. He's had 2 weekends with her since he was 3 years old. It's the only time he's ever seen her. She's been in and out of prison, and God knows if she's even alive today. So he and I spent a lot of time. We've had a lot of trouble in our relationship because he became one of us. And I tried everything I could. I remember at 18 years old, he was living in his truck on the side of the road with one of the wheels falling off. And I came to rescue him, and I said, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes here because I don't know if there's a right way and a wrong way. I'm just going to tell you the way it happened for me. I came to him and I said, "What you need is a power greater than yourself in your life." I said, "I'm going to give you a choice. Here's 5 of them. Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard. Pick one." But I still was fixing it. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. He did it, and he was in the Marine, he was in the Coast Guard and was doing well for a while, but, you know, opted for an early out. You know what they did? They said, "We're going to give anybody who wants an early out, we're going to give you this big check. Give me the money." Does that sound like one of us? Don't ever pay an alcoholic in advance. So we never finished the job. But we had a lot of trouble with him over the years, it got between us in a lot of ways too, and it still can be a problem in our lives. He called me, and this was about 2 years ago. It was one of the worst nights of my life, and he called me. But this is a tribute to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a Sunday night, and it was a cold night in Florida. I hate to say that; it sounds. But it was a cold, rainy night, and he called me at about 9:30. We had just come back from our home group, and he called me and he said, "Dad, he's living on the street." And he says, "I'm done. I need help." And I don't know why. This was the hardest conversation I ever had, and what I had to say to him that day on the phone, I don't know where it came from, and it wasn't rehearsed. I wasn't even thought about. But I said to him this, I said, "Son, I've spent thousands of dollars on your alcoholism. And You've been in and out of 4 halfway houses and 2 treatment centers, and you're worse, not better. You're getting worse. I said, I'm thinking I'm killing you, and I don't know what to do. I said, you're going to have to do what I did. You're going to have to walk into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, put your hand up, and say, I'm an alcoholic and I need help. You know where it's at. And I hope to God that the strangers that helped me are there for you. Through the kindness of strangers, most of us are here. And I hung up the phone that night. And this is a neat story for AA. And the next day I was calling a few friends because I was feeling very sorry for myself, and was saying, you know, telling them my story of woe and how sad I was and how hurt my son was on the street. And the next day, one of my friends, and some of us know him here, he called me back. He said, did your son, he said, what, would you mind if I reached out to your son? And I said, no, not at all. He wasn't even in this state. He wasn't in Florida. He was in Maryland. And you know, we can be homeless today, but we have a cell phone. You know, it's a little different. And new shoes, right? So I said no, and I gave him my son's phone number, and he called my son, and he called me back the next day, this friend of mine, and he said, listen, your son's getting on a plane today, and he's flying to Maryland. I'm going to put him in my basement. Now, this guy had a family. He had a daughter in high school, a daughter in college, and another son, a younger son in high school, and a family. He wasn't a wealthy guy. He was just a family man, a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, I've got a room in my basement that I'm going to put him in down there, and I'm going to take him through the steps. And I offered, I said, at least let me pay for the plane fare. And he said, no, he'll pay me back. And we ended up going, that my son ended up staying in that basement for a year. And you know, they tell a story when we went up there to give him his one-year medallion. We went up there and at their home group and gave him the one-year medallion. And my friend's wife spoke at a conference. We went and heard her that weekend. And here's what she said. She goes, our marriage was struggling so bad. We didn't know what to do. And we didn't know if it was going to be counseling, what we were going to do. It was really at an impasse. And there was just a line in their household. And my husband came to me and said, I'm putting this boy in our basement. And I thought, are you out of your mind? We can't even make our own family work and our own marriage. And he ended up staying there a year, and she said, what that boy did was bring our family together. So you don't really know how God shows up in our life. But, you know, Bob always says this. He always brings me back. He's got the lowest common denominator. The lowest common denominator in Alcoholics Anonymous is love. That's it. That's what it boils down to. That's the lowest common denominator. That's what we do here. We love the unlovable. And our other two sons, my two twin. When we got married again, we had twin boys, and they're as different as night and day. They're as different as we are, and one is really a straight A honor student, really good, responsible kid, and applying to college. The other one's already been held back a year, and he's working on year number two, and school's not his thing. He's like me. If you see him with a dictionary in his hand, he's looking up dirty words. Okay? You know. But we love our kids. And he just got caught. He's at a boarding school in Hilton Head. And he just got caught last week drinking beer with some of his golf team members. And of course, he used it. The consequences came, but he used the same excuse we all use when they asked him, you smell like beer, the house mother when he came in. Oh, no, no, no. You smell like beer. I smell beer on you. Oh, the guys were drinking. They must have spilled it on me. Yeah, right. But they took his car, and of course he had consequences, put him on probation, but he's got choices. You know, my wife was very upset. I knew the day was coming, sooner or later, you know, and this is something he's going to have to grow through. We're going to be here, and we're going to love him, and we're going to do whatever we can. I had a friend of mine give me a rule of thumb with my older son, And whether it's right or wrong, here's what he said to me one day, because there's a couple, these the only two rules of thumb I go by with my marriage. The first one with my marriage is, and I love what Bob said about what Chuck C. said, I have a different way of saying it. I don't treat him like an alcoholic. I was watching TV one day, and they had, I think it was Dean Smith, the basketball coach. He had retired, and he was on Good Morning America, and he had a 12-year-old son that had Down syndrome, and he wrote a book about how that child taught him to love. And now, I would have thought, God, what a terrible thing, you know, must have been really devastating to the family. And he said, and he sat there and talked about what the greatest gift he'd ever had in his life was that son. And what a difference in perspective, right? And later on, when I kind of asked God to shape some new ideals in my relationships and how I treat people, and it doesn't mean I do them all the time, but at least I ask for them, is I want to treat my wife like she's my 3-year-old child with Down syndrome. Now, that may sound cruel, but here's why. If I come home, if you come home and you have your 3-year-old daughter or son, and they got their diaper off and they're smearing their poop on the wall, you don't yell at them. You don't spank them. You just clean it up, change their diaper, and love them. That's what people did for me. That's why I'm here. And the other thing with our kids, here's what he said about my kids. Here's a principle I kind of adopted with my kids. And this may be right or wrong. I hope the Al-Anons don't get mad at me. But I was talking to my sponsor, and here's what he said to me. He says, I want you to pretend, when I didn't know what to do with my son, he said, pretend it's 6 months from now, and you're at your son's funeral. Is there anything you wish you would have done? Do it now. I leave you with that. Thank you.
Oh, God. Hi, everybody. My name's Tammy, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I was corralled in here. And
yeah.
But I'm doing it reluctantly, and Clancy, I don't like it that close. But it was funny because they asked me if I would do this panel on relationships and recovery, and I'm thinking I don't have anything to say about relationships and recovery, and then I stopped and thought about it, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm here with my, he's my second and third husband, and that's in sobriety, that's not counting the first husband that I was married to for 14 years. I am a daughter of an alcoholic. I am a granddaughter of an alcoholic. I am a mother of an alcoholic. I am a recovering alcoholic, so I guess I do have a little bit of experience. And, you know, I don't even know where I'm going to go with this one, but he said a lot of the things that I wanted to say. When I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about, mostly it was just letting go. That's kind of been my journey in all the relationships that I have, is the letting go and the acceptance, like you were talking about today. And I have really struggled in that, and especially in our marriage and with our kids. We have 5 kids. I'm a mother of 5. I've given birth to 4. And that is my heart. My kids are my heart. Joe's my heart, but my kids, I mean, I think you said it, Linda, that, you know, if you're a mother or a father, that's like, I don't know, especially moms, I know that, you know, that's, nothing can affect me like my kids. And so anyway, when Joe and I met, I was married to my first husband, and I left that marriage. And that right there is kind of self-will run riot. You know, I had absolutely no regard for my first husband. I hate to say that because he was a wonderful man. He's the father of my first 2 kids, and I kind of stepped all over that. But when I met Joe, I knew that I wanted to be with him. And
so we started that relationship kind of based on that. And we dated 2 years. And if you ask anybody, there's quite a few people that were present that are still around that watched that relationship. It wasn't, there is not one person alive that would have ever said we would have made it. There, I know we've blown everybody away because we're sitting here. I mean, it's been 23 years since the day we started dating. And I know that nobody ever thought that that would happen. And it has happened. It has been like this almost the, you know, maybe not the last 10 years, but we've definitely had our ups and downs. And I will never forget when we decided to get married. And that was the first time that I can remember hearing God say, "Don't do this." I mean, and he wasn't going. "Tammy, don't do this." He was going, "Tammy, don't do this." And I'm going, "Nah, nah, 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 I can't hear you." And it was because I wanted to be married to him. I wanted it. I was so afraid to trust God. I was so afraid that if I did it on God's time, I was going to lose what I wanted. And I wanted him. I wanted us to be together. And I knew it wasn't time. I mean, when the first time we got married, it was on my 5-year anniversary, and he had 4 years. And like you said, you know, you think that, you know, because you're in sobriety, this qualifies you to have this, you know, this perfect. I couldn't wait to start it because I thought it was going to be this wonderful, perfect relationship because we were in AA and together, and we had recovery together. And but you know, the minister who married us, he was in the program, and he was going, "Tammy, you guys are unequally yoked. Do not get married." And I'm going, but he loves God. You know, he loves God. And I thought that that was what was, you know, that was a great basis for us getting married. And I mean, almost from the first day, there were so many things that, you know, I brought into that marriage. I mean, it wasn't, you know, and I know you think I'm going to bash him, and I'm not. There were so many things that were a part of me growing up in an alcoholic home. You know, I had those abandonment issues. My father drank himself to death when he was 37 years old. I was 17 years old when he died. I had abandonment issues. I needed my dad, and my dad was so engrossed in his drinking that he never saw me. You know, he never could look at me. It was like, you know, climbing up in the chair to get the hug, I would always knock over the drink and get yelled at rather than get the hug. And so I had, you know, my parents divorced, and then he really, you know, it was, I mean, not many years later that he drank himself to death. And he was a clinical psychologist too. So, you know, I brought that stuff in. I brought in the insecurities of being an alcoholic, you know, that we all come in here with. And I thought that because I had done my step work that I had taken care of that. But just marry an alcoholic and you watch all those character defects. It's like the bobbleheads at the fair. You know, you're hitting down two and three more pop up. And that was our thing. That brought out every insecurity, just every character defect that I would never want to bring into a healthy marriage. It brought them out, and they were glaring. I mean, we really did not know how to do this at all. And having two kids or three kids at the time, you know, we just said that I couldn't do it. I couldn't do all the yelling, the fighting that we did. And the hardest thing I did was let go. Because I truly, really loved him. I never did want to let go. And that was the first time that in our relationship that I think I really did what God wanted me to do. And it was almost like the day I let him go, I heard God say, "Thank you. Now I can do what I need to do." And, you know, the funny thing about recovery is that all the pain, I've never grown closer to God when everything's going great in my life. It's always when I'm on my knees, I'm in tears, I am absolutely, totally paralyzed in fear. I don't know what to do. And that's when I've gotten the closest to him. And I can honestly say that during those almost 2 years that we were divorced, I probably grew more spiritually than than I had, you know, before then, and because it really made me have to look at my part. And somebody, we were talking about that, like, I couldn't believe I had a part. I couldn't believe, you know, forgive him? I don't think so, you know. There wasn't just anger, there was rage. And getting through that and recognizing that my part was that I willingly was there. I was there because I wanted to be there. He didn't make me, you know, he didn't make me do that. I did it because I loved him. And I really felt like, you know, he said something one time. He said, you know, if two people are meant to be together, there's nothing in the world that can pull them apart. If two people aren't meant to be together, there's nothing in the world that could keep them together. And I really realized that. We each went on our ways and we worked on our own program. And when we got back together, the one thing you said, we took the word divorce out of our vocabulary because that was always an easy out for us. You know, it was. I think when that's there, it really let me, both of us, know that we didn't have to stay. If it was uncomfortable, if it didn't feel good, if you weren't doing what I wanted you to do, then it was an easy out, you know. I can leave. And by taking that off the table, it really did make us have to stay and fight. And the one thing that was funny, because in almost every relationship I was told by my counselor, there's a fighter and there's a flighter. He was definitely the flighter. I am the fighter. You know, I sometimes walls that were meant to keep me from crossing over, I just thought were meant to climb over, you know, and rather than stop me. This our relationship was definitely one of those things. But you know, the greatest thing, I love being married to him. I'm grateful that neither one of us have given up, that we have invited God every day into our marriage, that all the things that we've gone through, I would never take back in a million years. Would I ever want to go through them again? Never. But I'm so thankful for what we have. One thing I want to add is that, you know, our kids, I wanted to talk about the kids because the kids for me have been my heart. And when I was I was almost 10 years sober. We had just had our twins. And, you know, just because we got back together again doesn't mean everything got perfect. Matter of fact, we were still struggling a lot with a lot of the same issues that we had always struggled with. And a lot of them were how we parent and how we communicate together. And my oldest son, I found out through some counseling, had been cutting himself, and he was suffering a lot of depression. And when I saw him that sad, when I saw him that broken, it did something to me. And I knew somehow I was at fault for that. I didn't make that happen, but I know the choices, a lot of the things that I made choices over, were a part of that. And on a particular day, my ex had called me up and said that it was my fault, and that if I hadn't divorced him and married Joe and moved away and, you know, blah blah blah, that none of this would be happening. And our boys were 11 months old, and I was going to go to dinner with my sponsor that night and with the five girls that I sponsored that we went out with every night. And I had been crying all day. Our twins 11 months old. I hadn't slept in 11 months. I hadn't eaten in 11 months. And when my sponsor came to the door, I said, I'll be right there. And I went to go brush my teeth, and I walked into our bathroom. And I brushed my teeth, and I gargled with Listerine, as I always did. And that particular day, instead of spitting it out, I swallowed it. And I just went and picked up that big bottle and chugged three quarters of it down. And, you know, that was something that we always said, that if, you know, if either one of us ever did that, that would be an out. That would be okay. And that was such a hard thing on our marriage. I ended up doing it two more times. And within 3 months of that happening, I got sober again, and that was 16 years ago. But it showed me that, this disease is so cunning, baffling, and powerful. I have always loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always thought that if I ever drank again, it would be something really big. I had no idea it would be something like that. I wasn't prepared for that. And so when this thing happened with our son, Joey, and he is my son. I've been his mom since he was 3 years old. And that's been something that we've always had a hard time with, too, is that I've loved him so much. And I think Joe had so much guilt because he used when he was born, and his mom not being in the picture. I think that's always been something we've struggled with. But I can tell you that I love this kid maybe as much as if I had given him birth to him, if not more. I mean, I felt this need to be there for him, and watching him struggle has been the hardest thing that I ever did. Even besides getting sober, I knew I was almost ready to, it was really hard. And the neatest part about that whole thing was I got to the point where I didn't know what to do anymore, and I felt myself getting sucked into that black hole just like I did when I drank with my son, and I felt like I couldn't get out of it. And I went out for a run one morning, and I just screamed at God. I'm like, God, you have got to help me. I don't know what to do anymore. I am so afraid. I'm so afraid I'm going to drink again. And because I could just see it. I could just see the thing unfold in the same way it did. And I was just like, you have got to help me with him, please. And I heard my sponsor go, why do you think that God loves you more than he loves him? And with that, it was just almost like this burden was taken off of me. And within 2 days, that friend of ours came, spent the night, and said, I want your son to come live with us. And that's kind of how he has worked, in our relationship. And that's how he's worked in my recovery, is that the moment I'm willing to let go, the moment I'm ready to open up my hand and say, okay, you can have it now, that's when I've gotten to witness the power of God, the God that we learn about in here. He did it for my sobriety. He has done it for everything in our lives. He's done it for our marriage, for our kids. Today we don't know what he's really doing, but it's okay. I trust it. I trust God today, whatever it is. I don't have the crazies anymore. I don't get the crazies. I don't get the crazies with him. He is who he is, and I've just got to stay on my part of the street. And, I am definitely a grateful recovering alcoholic. I am a grateful mother, daughter, sponsee, sponsor. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am grateful that I'm here with him, and we have a marriage in recovery. I was talking to one of my sponsees, and she said, aren't you lucky that you've got a husband that supports you today? And I was like, you know what? I really am. We support each other, and I just love him very much. And sorry for this impromptu whatever it was, but thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you, Joe. I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Just going to take a couple of minutes. Two couples, Polly and Dave Pistol and Dick and Peggy Martin, for many years did presentations on the traditions in their relationship, and it was quite popular and quite to the point. And our first tradition says, our common welfare should come first. Our individual well-being depends upon the unity of our marriage. The greatest gift you can give your children is to love each other. The rest of it will resolve itself if you take care of each other. And children can be enormously divisive, and they can be used by the, by our alcoholic ego to take advantage of those seams that show up and the opportunity where you don't get on the same page. And I think it's very important that we develop. When we talk about relationship, that's all life is. There's nothing else. I mean, there's nothing else in your work life. There's nothing else in your core family life. There's nothing else in your present family life. It's all relationships. When people talk about the fundamental relationships of yourself to your parents, of yourself to your children, and yourself to each other, the power of those relationships is our society has, as much as possible, agreed they're unavoidable and they're permanent. You can not have a relationship with your child, but what you have is an unsatisfactory relationship with your child. You cannot not have a relationship with your child. You cannot not have a relationship with your parents. If God wanted me to show up, he had to have exactly my mother and exactly my father at exactly the moment that they came together, or I would have been my brother or my sister. But I mean, for me to be around, if nothing else, my life was a gift of those two people at that moment being together. And the power of an unavoidable relationship, and for many of us, it's also how we're kind of related to Alcoholics Anonymous and to the God of our understanding. It's an unavoidable relationship. It is core to my life. And the power of that is you can't run and you can't hide. The power of relationships, especially those relationships, are their mirrors. And sometimes we don't want a mirror. But if you're married over a period of time and you have an anger issue, I mean, that mirror just keeps being put up and put up and put up. If you have a dishonesty issue, if you have, it is a mirror. And it is, if you're staying married and not running, there comes a time where you have to confront that and deal with it. That's the power of those relationships. They anneal you. They change us in a way that nothing else would. Most of us, as Joe talked about, would cut and run in different areas, arenas of our lives with jobs and different relationships. We have cut and run. But when you're in those fundamental relationships, you keep running into yourself in a way that, and it's, it's God speaking to us over here. Change this. Do something different. This is not working. And it's a movement, it's a request to move towards love, which is what the program ultimately is all about. Some of the individual things that I think we're close to, Linda and I, I also think it's vitally important that couples get on the same page with finance and sex. Finance causes more trouble in marriages often than sex causes in marriages, but those are important things to come together on. They're some of the fundamental platforms that we have in our relationship. Linda and my life changed significantly at 7 years of sobriety. We were both young. Linda was 21 when, or just 22 when we got married. I was just 24 when we got married. In our first 6 or 7 years in the program, we did our best, and it wasn't what it came to be later. But at 7 years, between 7 and 8 years, we had a second come to Jesus experience in our lives, and we deepened our relationship with the program much the same way that Joe and Tammy were talking about what they did with themselves. With the deepening of the steps, it altered us. It just changed us. It was, it was no more of the finger pointing. It was we were both together in the game, without question, and there was a coming together that was stronger than, and that was vitally important. One of the things we did at that point is we had a date night. We had two young children at that time, and we were talking about bills and kids, which is not how we fell in love. And we had to set aside a night where it was romantic. We started to go to Chicago and check up for the weekend. We did what you would do if you had a girlfriend. We started to, you know, bring romance in a real way back into our relationship rather than having the responsibility of marriage seemingly strip it away. And that was one of the most important things that we have done. The other thing we had is we had a couple that we were sponsored by a couple. I had my sponsor for 42 and a half years. He was a wonderful guy, and Linda had Jen for 20-some years before she passed. If you have someone that knows all about you, it's a gift. I mean, most of us, you know, your ego would like to have a house where no one could look in. God would like to have a house that's glass, where everybody could look in. And it was that sponsorship relationship, and many of us sell that short, and we don't use it with the facility that we might use it. That was important to us. I mean, there was a limit to where we would take a fight, I think, because we were going to end up at our sponsor's house having a conversation about what we were doing. And that's what's in it. I've lived in the same town all my life. I mean, I go to, you know, I see people I went to grade school with regularity. It is, and part of that is, I don't know if it's not just your reputation, it's who you are in your community. It's a village, and it has a conforming aspect to it. Your sponsees have a conforming aspect. I'm a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I, you know, if I veer too much, I've got to explain that or not explain it to the people that I sponsor and the people that I go shoot my mouth off with. It is, you know, vitally important. We've sponsored a number of couples in our lives, and it's always extraordinary. If you get a couple that aren't particularly well, it's just extraordinary how different information you get from the different, you know, your wife is getting one set of information, you're getting another set of information. They most of the time don't jive. Sometimes they do, but they don't. It is, I had a point I was going to make about that, and I don't remember what the hell it was. But the discipline, the steps, which bring you to taking your own inventory, which give us an opportunity to take a look at the end work and take responsibility. And I think that that's what happened to Linda and I and myself more than anything else at 7 years, was that I finally took responsibility for my life. The ego's message is, it's not my fault, I'm not to blame. I mean, that is the constant internal, I'm a victim. I mean, it didn't happen the way I wanted to happen. I didn't say what I wanted to say. It's like there's no one home. But the strength that comes with the program of owning your life, of becoming cause in your own life. I love what Mary Emma said the other night. If I'm not the problem, there is no solution. I've been around a long time. I'd not heard those words. And I thought, what powerful words. But the privilege of permanent relationships. And I'm well aware that, you know, we have a child that's been divorced. I mean, I'm well aware that not all relationships are permanent in that aspect. But the idea of relationships that we honor with the idea of permanence are a gift. They give something, they're a privilege. They are life-changing. And they are life-changing because if you don't change, you cannot stay in them. And as is our sobriety. Our sobriety is life-changing because if we don't change, we will not stay. Thank you.